Blog Talk Radio.
Readers Entertainment Radio presents Book Lights with your host, author Lisa Kessler. Book Lights, where we're shining a light on good books.
Hello, everyone. Can you believe we are heading into the end of May? How is that possible? Anyway, I hope it's warm enough where you are. Your flowers are blooming and it's not too hot yet. I'm in Florida, so they call this preheat season. We're just warming up. But today, you are in for a huge treat wherever you're listening. Today, we have author Brent Olson on. He's also a journalist, and he has a book out of alternative history that I can't wait to talk about. So if you haven't read him yet, I'll read his bio here so you can get to know him. Brent Olson lives in Big Stone County on the edge of the prairie in western Minnesota. But in his life as a working journalist, he's filed articles from 20 countries and 6 continents. This has led him to want to change the world he lives in through his work as a county commissioner and create new worlds in his recent novels, Anger and Between the Helpless and the Darkness. In this time of news and information tailored so everyone can hear only what they want to hear, he presents information that will leave everyone just a little unsettled. Olson is a Big Stone County Commissioner and also a 2012 Bush Foundation Fellow. And you can find out more about him on his website. I did put a link to the website right there on Blog Talk. So if you are listening to us today live, or if you're listening later, you can click that link and check out his website. He's got lots of interesting blogs and essays up there. So definitely go take a look. And without any further delay, are you there, Brent?
I am there, Lisa. You bet.
All right. Great to have you on today. And we were talking before the show, but you were telling me that right now in May in Minnesota, that's the time we should go visit, right?
Oh, you bet. It's a gorgeous place right now. I've got I have a French brother-in-law, and for 30 years, he either only came here at Christmas when it was 20 below or they came for the 4th of July when it was 110, and he thought we were all insane. And it was only just a few years ago that he came the last week in May, and he went, "Oh, okay. I'll give you this."
Yes, you have a couple weeks of normal temperature.
Yep.
Well, I was looking at your book, Between the Helpless and the Darkness, and this one is an alternate history, but it involves Vikings. And so I wondered if you might tell us kind of what inspired this book.
This is the oddest book I've ever written. the final chapter just came into my head almost in its entirety. Including almost word for word the last couple pages. And then
wow.
I just sort of built it around that. And the premise of the book is, you know, you look at the world we live in, you can't help but think that maybe we've gone wrong in a few places.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make things go right. And I just had to go back 1,000 years in order to do it.
So we made a wrong turn with the Vikings?
Well, we've made a number of wrong turns hither and yon.
What?
But what I like, I'm from Minnesota. I'm mainly of Scandinavian descent. And before Christianity came to Scandinavia, there was really... Women really had a lot of authority. I mean, part of the wedding ceremony was the husband gave the keys to the household to his new wife, and they had rights of divorce, and it was expected women would make a lot of decisions. And I like that. I think, you know, you may not have noticed as a woman, but we don't have a perfect society in terms of...
Yes, I have noticed recently.
Yeah,
it's been
okay.
Pointed out more often.
I, uh, I felt free to say that because you can't reach through the phone lines and strangle me for that observation. But so I thought I would marry that, and then I've always been fascinated with the First Nations, the Native Americans in the northeastern United States and Nova Scotia there, because they also had a really very interesting culture. And I just thought, you know, what if we got those two together in kind of an equal partnership, as opposed to colonizer, you know, victim thing,
right,
the way we've got. And just tried to make it work out. And that's, there you go. There's the whole book. Tried to make it work out.
Trying to make it work out. Well, I wanted to ask, when you were, because everything that I was reading about you, you are a journalist and you write essays and that kind of thing. Are you secretly a historian? Why would the last chapter of that book come to you?
It's kind of funny. The writers I really admire are guys like Robert Caro and David Halberstam and people like that, who write these incredibly detailed, authoritative, deeply, deeply researched, huge books. And I have neither the talent nor the inclination to be a writer like that, but it's the sort of work I really admire. And I read a lot. And I've been lucky enough to have people pay me to go places. I've seen how things work in other places, and just like trying to tie it all together.
Do you have, have you done your DNA research? Are you related to any Vikings? Do they, do you feel a kinship there?
I am half Norwegian and half Welsh. So my ancestors have been kind of a pain in the neck down through the centuries to many different people. So yeah, I love Norway. My wife and I have driven over big chunks of Norway. We've been to Svalbard in the, you know, a few hundred miles from the North Pole, and we've spent time in Iceland and the Faroe Islands, and it's a place and a culture and a people that I really do feel very comfortable with.
Oh, that's so cool. And when this final chapter came to you, how long did it take you to, like, cobble together, how am I going to get a Viking over here?
Well, from start to finish, I bet the book took 15 years.
Wow.
I had a lot of other stuff I was doing in the meantime, but I would peck away at it, and every now and then I'd have an aha moment and go back to work on it, and then sometimes I'd get distracted by needing to earn a living or put kids through college, but
rude.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Did you know about the Viking who's in it? I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, but he he was real, right?
He's a real guy, Harald Hardrada.
Okay.
And then the last part of his name translates as the hard ruler, because he was really, in real life, he is probably kind of an awful man. I mean, very, very violent and authoritative. And the premise of my book, in real life, he died trying to invade England in 1066. And in my book, he lives. And he suffers kind of an epiphany that he spent his whole life kind of striving to be the king of all he surveys, and he just realizes what that has brought him to. And I think maybe we could do with a few more of those epiphanies for the people who do nothing but struggle to get to the top.
Right, right. And did you know about him before you got the inspiration for this book, or did you go find him because he would fit it best?
No, I knew about him. He's he's really sort of a pivotal figure in Scandinavian history. A lot of people call him the last Viking. But he had a fascinating life. He fought his first battle when he was 14 years old and lost it and was carried off the field bleeding and went to Kyiv, Ukraine, where he had relatives, and he ended up in Constantinople and was a member of the emperor of the Byzantine emperor's personal bodyguard.
Wow.
And that was only the first 20 years of his life.
And then he went back to Scandinavia and became like...
And became king of Norway.
King? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big life because travel, I don't know if you know this, but there weren't airplanes then.
I haven't followed his route completely through Ukraine, but the Byzantine emperors used Scandinavians as their bodyguards because they didn't have any political ties. You know, they were kind of neutral parties. Mm-hmm. So there was a real trading route from Turkey all the way to Norway and back, which seems impossible, but it's pretty well documented.
Wow. Humanity as a whole, when we really want something, we find a way. It's pretty amazing when you look back at these things in history and you're like, how did they cross those mountains? Well,
yeah.
We wanted to get to the other side.
we're amazing as a species.
Yes, for sure. So I wanted to ask you, this kind of dovetails right into your writing journey, because it looked to me like everything that I was finding was, you know, journalism and that kind of thing. What made you decide I want to write fiction?
Maybe a lack of good sense. I don't know. I have, through my life, have had a tendency to say, what the hell, let's try it, probably more often than I should. And this is a story I wanted to tell, and I could only tell it through fiction. So there you go.
Well, you've written a couple other fiction books, too. So at times you have wanted to, you know, tell your own story.
Yeah. I have 8 books altogether, 4 collections of essays, a memoir, and then 3 novels, one of which is just kind of genre thriller, and one is an alternative history, and one is kind of a post-apocalyptic survival guide. So I guess I've covered about... I can't do the sort of writing you do, but I've covered most of the other bases.
So you don't have a paranormal romance in your drawer. No werewolves,
Lisa,
in Minnesota? What?
Lisa, I am a Scandinavian farmer from western Minnesota. The chances of me writing a romance are really fairly slim.
Are there any other genres that you're dying to tap into, a little sci-fi or high fantasy?
Well, I love science fiction. That was always, I mean, when I was a kid, I started with Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov. And then as I became an adult, I shifted to Lois McMaster Buchholz and some of those people. So really, I love reading science fiction. I don't think I have a particular talent for writing it.
Right, yeah. It's always difficult for me. It's amazing how they figure, a good sci-fi writer can figure out, well, this technology could possibly lead to this one. And I'm just like, wow. That's...
Yeah,
I'm obviously not that futuristic of a thinker, but it's amazing to me what you know, sci-fi authors come up with. I was lucky enough to meet Ray Bradbury a couple times before he died, and he was always amazing to me because he would talk about that, you know, it's sci-fi and fantasy writers who change the world because people dream up what could happen, and then science goes, huh, and figures out a way.
You know, it's kind of funny. I was just working on a speech, and I'm talking about a few years ago, I applied for a grant, and I was turned down, and then they sent me the comments of the grant panel, which mm-hmm. is a little like, you know, asking a girl to the prom, and then when she turns you down, she gives you a PowerPoint presentation on all the reasons why she's turning you down.
Oh, dang. Harsh.
Yeah. Anyway, I made this grant application, and one of the notes was that, boy, this is a pretty lofty goal. What did they want to do, change the world? And I was like, yes. Yes, I do. Of course.
You saw my goal.
Why would you not want to change the world if you could?
Right. Well, what's next for you? Are you writing any more fiction, or are you staying too busy doing your other things?
Oh, I'm about 30,000 words into the sequel of Between the Helpless and the Darkness. And I turn 70 at the end of this year, and then I'll be all done with my career as an elected official. I didn't run for another term. And I have 4 more books I want to write.
Oh,
but,
good.
But my parents both lived well into their 90s. So, and I had a grandmother that lived to be 100. So I'm prepared to be diligent in my dotage.
Yeah, so you have plenty of time. So can you kind of give us a little teaser about how do you write a sequel to alternate history?
Well, you carry it to fruition, because this new society I invented, this amalgamation of First Nations and Viking society, is not perfect. And so I'm trying to bring in another culture to kind of add what they're missing. So that's and that was kind of a problem. So I had to go back. I had to go back to Kyiv and Ukraine and that part of the world to snatch up another group of people and get them over to America.
Ah, look at you. Yeah. So you're sort of, that kind of sounds like sci-fi, but in the past.
Yeah, you're right. You're not wrong at that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I love that. So when you're writing fiction versus journalism and essays, do you feel like there's a switch in your brain that you have to turn to remember that you're God and now you can write whatever you want?
I've stopped doing actual journalism now because it's more fun to make up lies, Lisa. And but I have a syndicated column called Independently Speaking that's been running to, I don't know, about 1 million people a week for 25 years now.
Wow, and, congratulations.
So I'm gonna keep doing that, but since I really just write about whatever hell I want when I do my column, there's not that much difference between fiction and what I do on a weekly basis.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting, because when you can write anything you want for your column, I mean, I'm guessing you probably have a word count limit, but do you get ideas for books you want to write from writing these essays?
Oh, I do. And I get suggestions from readers too. I mean, I have a number of readers who are deeply committed to having me write a book about our Newfoundland Francis, who shows up in the column on a fairly regular basis.
So your dog needs a book?
Apparently she does. I didn't know that, but some people find her deeply interesting.
Why not? Why not? You know, Black Beauty was about a horse. We haven't had one about a dog.
No. I mean, and this wouldn't be Old Yeller. There'd be a happy ending in it, I imagine.
Right. Please, no Old Yeller. Can't take it. Can't take it. When you were working on all these different books, you wrote in, you know, you've written three novels, all three different genres. do you have a favorite? Did you have fun writing your thriller? Do you want to write more of those?
Yeah, you know, Lisa, it's kind of like asking me who my favorite child is.
I know.
They're all... I like Between the Helpless and the Darkness because I did something that I don't think has been done before, and I think it's the best thing I've ever written technically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a book I probably could have written 20 years ago. I wouldn't have had the skills to do it.
Right.
So that's probably what I'm most proud of, is that I was able to make this all work. I like having a body of work. I liked, I remember an interview I heard with Don Henley of the Eagles, where he talked about when they put their band together, they really wanted to be successful for a long time, you know?
Right.
I mean, they wanted a body of work. And I think that's maybe what I like the best, is having a pretty wide body of work that I can look back and say, oh, not everyone could do that.
Right. That's true. And when you talk about like this big body of work, you have not only, you know, like journalism articles, but essays are like a window into your life. And for me, I have this internal editor whenever I'm writing when I'm not writing a fictional world, that's going, well, that's boring. Well, who cares? Well, why should you tell him this, you know, all this stuff? How do you get around that? I mean, you must be used to it now because you've been doing it so long, but was that an interesting process for you? Do you have an internal editor that says nasty things to you?
Well, I have a wife who says, I don't think everyone needs to know this.
Well, that's probably good to have a little. She's your filter.
She is my filter. Absolutely. She's the one that keeps me out of lawsuits and lets us still be invited out to dinner and things like that. So, I remember in the interview in the intro to one of my books, I can't remember which one, I talked about struggling with the idea of, who do I think I am? I mean,
right.
To think that I can write, put things down on paper, and they will be of enough value that someone will give money to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
That's there's a certain amount of hubris involved in doing that, but you can't really be a writer unless you have that, unless you think what you're saying is of value. So it's just something. And, of course, you always have to retain the ability to go, no, that's dumb. I shouldn't have written that.
Yes, sometimes the internal editor is correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there is definitely, the more you write, the better you get at being able to determine if your internal editor is correct, that this sucks and I need to rewrite this whole thing.
It's when I used to go into schools a lot, you know, before COVID. Like if I was going to a town to give a speech, I would offer to go into the school for free.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, it would take away the guilt. You know, if I was getting paid and I'd count the number of people in the audience and think, I don't think I'm giving them each $17 worth of wisdom here tonight.
But you could go to the school for free and all that guilt's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
but I'd say the thing about being a writer is a writer has to write, and then you have to let someone else read what you've written, and then you have to listen to their critique of what you've written, and then the hardest part is you have to decide if they're right or not.
Right.
And sometimes you just have to go, no, everyone else is wrong. I'm right.
I was at a talk once and Neil Gaiman, it was a chat with Neil Gaiman, and one of the things he said resonated with me so much. He said that, you know, when you work on books and an editor gives you an idea, their idea is always wrong, but it means something was missing right there that you need to fix. And I thought, that is so wise, because that is so true.
Yeah.
Something's broken, but that's not the way to fix it.
Yep. Yeah, I guess I would go along with that. Yeah.
Well, I loved on your back to Between the Helpless and the Darkness, for the readers who are listening, you should definitely go check out the book. But at the bottom of the description, it says something to the tune of, which I'm probably going to butcher, but you moved an arrow an inch and changed the world. And I think that is such a powerful way to look at alternative history. You know, Stephen King's done it with the JFK thing. And I know there's some sci-fi authors who have done it with like Oppenheimer and things like that. But it's so, that butterfly effect is like intoxicating, thinking how things would be different if someone had turned right instead of left, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of a believer. You know, we just spent a couple weeks in London, and we toured Winston Churchill's museum.
Oh.
Okay. Now here was a guy who was wrong about so many things.
Right.
Colonialism and the aristocracy and all this stuff. Just totally wrong. Except he was completely right about Hitler before anyone else was.
Right.
So if you're wrong about so much stuff, but if what you're right about is important enough,
monumental,
does that cancel everything else out? And what would we have done without Churchill at that moment, or Roosevelt at that moment? Or, you know, I'm kind of a believer in great people in history rise to a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the bad moments we have in our life, in our history, have come about when there's been no one to kind of rise up and take hold and say, no, this is the way this is the path we're going to follow.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, before we run out of time here, because I could talk to you for hours, but we're running out of time. And if readers read this book and they get really excited and they want to ask you, so when is that sequel coming? How can readers get in touch with you? Are you on social media? Should they go through your website? How do they find you?
I have my weekly column. What I do is there's people who pay me for my column, but I hang on to the copyright. And so a few days after the people who pay for it get it, I put it up on Substack, on Independently Speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have an Independently Speaking Facebook page where I'm pretty easy to find. If you Google Brent Olson, I'll show up.
All right.
And I know on
your website, I think I saw a link about the Substack. Can people sign up for it there?
You bet.
All right. All right. So everyone go check out Brent's website. It's brentolson.online, and you can sign up for his Substack. And I think there's a link to Facebook there. And definitely go check out Between the Helpless and the Darkness. It sounds like a fantastic read. So thanks so much for being here, Brent.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on Book Lights. Be sure to connect with us at www.readersentertainment.com for articles, blogs, videos, and podcasts that matter to readers.